another day, another 50 cents. It's McCowan, it's Shannon on the podcast today. A couple of topics for the same guest. Brian Cooper has worn numerous hats over the course of his career. And I think people who follow the radio show, John, know of Brian because we had him on a regular basis. Generally speaking, as our sports business guy.
Yeah.
But one of the other things that Brian has intensively been involved in, he was formerly a vice president of the Toronto Raptors and has now taken the mantle of chairman of the board of Canada Basketball. And if you can't figure that out, Canada Basketball is the entity that conducts, governs international events, championships, puts together Team Canada for international events. Anyway, they have a big event coming up this week, in Victoria, as the men's side tries to qualify for the Tokyo Olympics.
Yeah.
We'll chat with Brian about that. And then we'll chat about some sports business things. And maybe most specifically, some reaction at this point in time to how the pandemic has impacted the business of sports. That's all coming up. Shannon, McCowan, back after these. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, and with us, the chairman of the board of Canada Basketball.
That's a big title.
Yeah, it just means you don't get paid anything, and
thank you, Bobby.
They mooch off you. That's lots what of happens.
But there's got to be perks, Brian. There's got to be perks.
Yeah. I got a lot of good t-shirts now, John. Thanks.
Beautiful.
So Brian joins us from now where are you? You're in BC. You're in Victoria?
I'm in Victoria. We have the Olympic qualifying tournament out here.
Is it unusual to have this tournament so close to the games themselves historically?
Correct. It was supposed to come off a year previous to this. Due to COVID, they had to cancel it. I mean, the good news is this is the first time we've hosted this. And so we're playing on Canadian soil. Unfortunately, we're not going to have the size of crowd we would like to cheer a team on. But the fact that it is on Canadian soil, I think there's a benefit to us.
Well, what's the attendance limit, as you understand it?
10% of the house. So it'll be about 800 people per game. I think it was an 8,000 seater venue. Mm-hmm. It's better than nothing, Bob, but it just won't quite be the same, obviously.
All right, let's go through the whole thing. How many teams are involved?
There's six teams competing for one spot in the Olympics.
And so it's first or out.
It's China who has always qualified for the Olympics in basketball since 1984, Uruguay, Greece, who is missing Giannis, thankfully, but his brother is playing. It's Czechoslovakia, Turkey.
Czech Republic.
Czech Republic. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. But it is some tough competition here. And as you both know, international basketball is completely different from NBA basketball. It's a tougher game. It is a faster game as well. You don't have as many timeouts. And so the coach involvement is less, although we have one of the best coaches in the world, and Nick Nurse. So we feel confident that we can get through this. And we got a great team. And I got to tell you, this is a seminal moment for Canada basketball, specifically for the men's team. We have nine of the 12 players playing for us are NBA players, many of them starters. This has never happened before. John, as you know, it's always happened in hockey where, you know, Sidney Crosby's three rounds of the NBA, of the NHL playoffs, he's nicked up, he gets knocked out, and he gets on a plane 2 days later to go play for Canada in the World Championships in Germany. Mm-hmm. That has not happened for us. Now it is happening. And we would have even been better if Jamal Murray has an ACL, torn ACL, was injured. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, another NBA star, plantar fasciitis, and Tristan Thompson has a shoulder injury. All of them committed to us, but unfortunately couldn't make it. But
what changed? What changed, Brian?
You know what? I think I'd like to say leadership. Thanks, John. but what changed? I think a lot of it is guys like Jamal Murray, RJ Barrett, coaches, you know, like Nick Nurse, that said, you know, guys, we want to play for our country. And, you know, I think from this point on, we will have our best out there. But for years, and I think you know the stories, we always never got the top guys. There was always an excuse that of why they didn't play. Guys like Steve Nash, though, and Corey Joseph have always been there. But now to have, you know, the majority, three quarters of your team, NBA players, most of them starters, guys like Dwight Powell and Nikolai Alexander-Walker, RJ Barrett, I mean, we got a good team.
Well, who's, you play China first?
Yes.
And that's maybe, that may wind up being the toughest game you play.
It may. I also want to point out, you know, just basketball in general, John, when we say what changed, if you base it on NBA players and WNBA players, we're the second most powerful basketball country in the world. I mean, there's other than the United States, no one feeds that pipeline more than us. We have 172 NCAA men's players this year, another 68 women's players. This country, you know, the face of our country is changing in terms of racial makeup and ethnicity and regional ancestry. And basketball reflects that. And I think you're going to see our participation numbers are higher than they've ever been. And I'm talking about men and women. We are a treasure trove of basketball talent right now.
It's interesting you say that, because what's happened, and it's the same thing in hockey, is the Americans with what they do with their college systems.
That's a good point. Yeah.
They have looked north and said, man, oh man, there's some athletes there. Yeah. And between finding these pockets of great talent and Title IX always helps Canadians. We get a chance for some of our best young student athletes to go and get an education and improve their basketball in the United States.
Well, and at the same time, U Sport and the Canadian Elite Basketball League, and now there's an option for those players that don't make it to the NBA or to the G League. They can play on their home teams and develop their talent with some of the best in the world. So it's a real positive change. And I think all of those things is being reflected by what we're going to be seeing this week coming up.
What happens if you're not successful this weekend and you wind up being excluded from the Olympics?
Well, first of all, our women are ranked number 4 in the world, and we are already in the Olympics. And I think we have a very good chance. I feel very confident we're going to medal in the Olympics, so, although one of our key players has been injured. But I definitely believe there is going to be basketball success. If we do make it this week, Bob, I think the story of the Olympics this summer will be Canada and basketball. If we lose here on the men's side, I don't think we've lost. I think we've gained a lot just by these players, as I mentioned earlier, showing up and supporting their country. It's a turnaround moment. And I don't think we're going to be losing that again. You know, I got to tell you, from the coach down to the players, all they've been talking about this week is, you know, it's our time. And whether we win or not, it is our time on the world stage of basketball. You know, we got a lot of kids, you know, Nembhard and a bunch of other kids right behind us. I don't know if you recall, I think two years ago, we won the U19s.
Yeah.
We beat the Americans in the U19s. We have a pipeline of players coming up. And if you look at the NCAA, I mean, whether these guys that are pros now come back, which I think they will, and then mix them with the up-and-comers, you know, it's going to be for years to come that we have a great team.
One of the interesting things is what Nick has brought to the program. And the other thing is there's going to be a bunch of people that listen to this show that don't really understand Nick's international experience. And when you combine those two things, what has he brought to what you're trying to do at Basketball Canada?
Well, first of all, it's his attitude. I mean, you're right. Nick cut his teeth in international basketball. I mean, he coached over in England and in Europe for 15 years. He knows the game really, really well. I think Nick, as a coach, I mean, everyone wants to play for this guy. He was coach of the year last year. He brings out the best in players that look ordinary. And all of a sudden, under his tutelage, you know, they become extraordinary players because he plays them as a team. And so I think, you know, having him, and I should say Rowan Barrett as well as our GM, they've done a good job in a constant communication with these players. You know, Nick's going around on his NBA schedule. Believe me, he is saying hi to each one of the Canadian players as they are in warmups, talking about we got camp coming up. So there is a communication. There's an ultimate respect for the coach. And all of these players want to get better. And if that means, you know, post-NBA play on an international level with under the coaching of Nick and you know, other people that he brings along, I think it's a benefit to them. So I think you make a good point that Nick plays a very, very big role in attracting the best players for us.
Economically, what does this tournament mean for Basketball Canada? I mean, in terms of sponsorship dollars.
Well, it means a lot. You know, it's the profile. Actually, CBC is covering this. We just did the first broadcast daily Canada Basketball's ever had in signing up Sportsnet as our partner. We are developing a tournament that it will start in June 22, where we'll be having a basketball festival every year, an international one. And this will, Bob, the analogy is this will be our World Juniors, that every year we're going to be hosting an international competition of the highest level in Canada. We'll start the first 3 years in Toronto, but then it'll be moving across the country. So that profile will help us tremendously. This profile here, the brand of basketball is being seen, but more importantly, the organization itself. We have a lot of momentum right now. Sponsorship dollars, we're speaking to some major brands right now that we're just close to signing that will take us, you know, for the next 3 or 4 years as we develop that property and an event-based property, as well as we develop our grassroots program. So it means a lot, Bob. As you know, we haven't had anything to sell but IP rights.
Right.
But when you have an event-based strategy and when you're doing it on a home turf, when you have a broadcast partner that says, I'm going to profile players, men and women, I'm going to profile the international competition. You used to have to go on DAZN to watch international competition. Now it'll be on linear television.
We're going to take the break. We'll come back with Brian. We'll discuss, we'll get away from basketball a little bit and discuss a little bit more about sports business. And it's been a while since we've had a chance to chat. What has the impact been of the pandemic across North America to professional sports? It may seem obvious, but then again, it may not be. We'll discuss that when we return after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon Brian Cooper, who is the chairman of the board of Canada Basketball. But
Brian, you talked about this having a content play now. Boy, that sounds a lot like our friends at Hockey Canada. Where would you have gotten that idea? Where would that have come from, man?
Well, it could have been the 10 years I sat on the board of directors. you know, I never, it's research, it's R&D, rip off and duplicate, John.
That's right. As soon as you said, we're going to have a tournament, we're going to own something, we're going to do this. I mean, I'm saying, wow, Shazam, I've seen that before.
What a genius.
You're going to get an invoice from Nicholson. So that's all I know. Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, John. You just outed me.
Okay to move on now, John?
You can do whatever you want, Bob.
Well, apparently not.
Well, it depends what day.
We have seen... we've seen chaos in sports. Decisions made almost on the spur of the moment. A moving target, on and on and on and on. We're now kind of emerging from all this from an economic perspective with fans being allowed into the buildings. And there have been, to the best of my knowledge, no fatalities in terms of franchises. But it doesn't mean that there aren't significant wounds and injuries. And the higher level you go, the less the impact really is. But junior hockey has suffered greatly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we haven't lost any franchises that I'm aware of. I mean, nobody has basically thrown up their arms that I know of and said, I can't do this anymore. But what's the short-term future here for life at the edge of the pandemic?
Well, obviously, Bob, these are unprecedented times, and you know, we don't know with certainty, you know, what does it look like as we emerge from this COVID situation to trying to get back to normal. But I could tell you this, if you look at past situations in the world, whether there were world wars or pandemics of one sense or another, sport and gathering has always been a unifier and a signal of getting back to normal. I mean, baseball was one of the things that, you know, right after the world wars that brought the United States back, is people going out to baseball games. And if you look at even when we went through SARS, that, you know, people, it was concerts and all of those things that were sort of bringing us back. People want to be united and they want to cheer together. You know, I just got a renewal for one of my season seats, one of the sports. And, you know, they went through a laundry list of, would you, one, want to go back to your seat? Two, would you be, you know, okay to be sitting within 6 meters of another person? Three, would you want two seats? And are you okay to go to the concessions? I don't know if you've got the same thing. And so everyone is testing the waters as to the level of comfort. I think we're seeing, you know, gatherings going on now, whether it's the Pride Parade or any other gatherings in Toronto and around the country, where more and more people are being comfortable. They're being safe, but they're being more comfortable because they've either had one shot or they've had two.
So
I think sport will be the one that unifies us.
So fans will come back. How long will it take for corporate dollars to come back?
Well, you know what? Corporate dollars are looking for ways to, and look, part of the thing, I was speaking to an executive at the NHL the other day. Part of the thing that has happened is that it has advanced the digital opportunity for corporations to utilize the brands of the sport and teams that they're involved with. You know, before it was all, you know, the signage that they want to impress the 19,000 people in the building and the broadcast coverage. Well, the signage is still there for the broadcast coverage, but they're engaging the 19,000 people and 10 times that by doing more engagement online. And they're coming up with unique and interesting and impactful ways to engage the consumer. So, you know, I think everyone has seen this pent up willingness to engage, whether it's at retail. You know, people saying retail is coming back stronger than ever and people are buying like crazy, and they shifted to online. Mm-hmm. You know, in my house, the truck coming every 5 minutes, it seems. and you know, Lori, but it is, and I think that the same thing is happening with the sport consumers, that they are going to engage online. And so I think the corporate dollars are still there. They're not going away.
Well, what'll be interesting, I mean, using the analogy that you've provided here with online shopping, is will people renew their season tickets in the same fashion that they did? Or have they become used to sitting at home and watching the games on television? Because that has been the only option for those 20 to 60,000 people that usually are going to the arena.
Correct, Bob. But, you know, I think the difference between going to a game and watching a game are still going to be the same. Look, to be honest with you, I love watching like football. I love watching at home because I see the analysis. I you get the replays. You get insights that you don't during the game. When you're at a game, that visceral energy, that excitement, the high-fiving a guy you don't even know, you can't replace that on TV. And so I think once people feel safe that they can go back to do that, that is the ultimate. That's why 15,000 people stand outside of Scotiabank for a shared Scotiabank Arena, for a shared experience of watching the screen together. Mm-hmm. And so I think people will go back.
Well, I mean, you're entitled to that viewpoint. I think it's a party atmosphere and outside the arena. And I think it's totally different than the atmosphere inside the arena.
Yeah, one is free and one isn't.
Well,
yeah, I know. But at the end of the game, when they're also in a win and they're all joining together outside, they feel like they've all been there for that moment. Mm-hmm. And everyone wants to say, where were you? Yeah, it's amazing how many people say they were at this special moment when the arena only holds 20,000 and 50,000 people are saying they were there.
Well, but if you really, you know, we could break this down even further. If you really want to watch a sporting event because you're interested in the event itself, then you're going to watch it by yourself in your family room or wherever your television is, because that's where you, that is where you can pay attention. You know, as many people as go to Jurassic Park or wherever, all these outdoor things, that's completely social. Yeah. It has nothing really to do with the game itself. It's no different than going to a bar, because I'm sure we've all watched sporting events in a bar, and it's the worst place to watch an event. It, you go there to drink beer, be social, and say, oh yeah, I watched the game. I was at Joe's bar down the street. Well, you didn't hear a damn thing because the sound wasn't up, and you didn't see half of it because you were busy yakking with somebody or drinking beer, or eating peanuts. What?
You're dead on. You're dead. You know what? It's why people take selfies at events, that they're there to tell other people that, you know, I was there, I was part of it. We are social animals. And you're, again, you're high-fiving with a guy you never saw before because you, there's a shared celebration. You and I think we're old. I'd rather get into the game watching it. Like, I go to enough sporting events and I love live sporting events. But at the same time, when I want to really see a game, I'm watching in front of my TV.
Well, and I don't have an issue with watching games. And you and I have gone to basketball games together. And I'm not high-fiving the guy next to me. I'm not, you know, am I going to be happy if the home team does something? Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, but you're not a fan, but, Bob. Bob, you're not a fan. You're not the regular guy.
I'm not.
Yeah, that we. I mean, that's the one thing with, between the three of us.
Well,
We have, it's different when you earn your living and create a career around professional sports or sports in general, as opposed to the guy who, you know, works at the local Loblaws store and then saves money up to go to the Leaf game or the Raptor game. That's a different experience for him than it is for the three of us.
Yeah. But he ain't sitting in Brian Cooper's seats. I can tell you that right now.
That's if Brian renewed. Brian hasn't said whether he's renewed or not yet. He may not renew. You think ticket prices?
I'm definitely renewing.
You think ticket prices go up, Brian?
I'm definitely renewing. And Bob, you didn't have to take that shot, but anyway,
do you think ticket prices?
Well,
are
the
going
shot
up?
Wasn't at you. It was at I just happened to know that the income level of the guy who's working at Loblaws is not going to be enough for him to buy the tickets that you sit in.
Correct. Thank you very much,
and,
Bob.
And in response to Shannon's query, I think it was about tickets going up. It's already happening. MLSE is already raising tickets, and I don't know, is it across the board?
That I don't know.
What season tickets have you received your renewal for? Was it basketball?
Yeah, basketball.
And did the price go up?
I don't recall.
Oh, really? Must be nice. Must be nice to be you and not worry about those real little things.
Come on,
like,
Bobby. You know,
the price went up.
Please. Okay.
I don't know the price went
you
up.
Wouldn't
I don't
know care. Either because you've never paid for a ticket in your whole life. But anyway.
Damn right. And I'm proud of it. Well, I have paid for the odd one.
That's not true.
Well,
how long do you think it's going to take for? I mean, I've had people at networks and people at sports teams say it's going to take us 3 years. Do you think it's going to be to get back to the same level? You think it's going to be quicker than that?
No, I definitely think it's going to. I mean, look at the Islander games. You know, I'm thinking about going down to the Tampa game if it ends up in the finals in terms of games 7 and 6. There will be full houses, I think, by mid next season. I think. Look, I'm you know, not a doctor or a disease specialist, but I think people feel safe enough in many cases. Certainly in the United States, there will be full houses.
Oh, and we all long for the return to normalcy, and yet this experience that we are. I was going to say we've gone through, but we're not done going through it.
Nope.
Is going to have lasting legacies. We are not just going to be the same people coming out of this that we were going into this. Our patterns of purchase, as you documented with, you know, your lovely wife, you know, packages coming to the door every day. The notion of going out and shopping, well, you might still do that on occasion because it's a social event, but now you realize you don't have to. Mm-hmm. Now you trust what we've all come to understand. We had to do. If you wanted something, this is how you got it. How is this going to impact sports? The world has changed as a result of this. Do you know how it will impact what way we watch, what we watch, how we watch it?
I think it'll impact sport the least. And I could be totally wrong on this. But again, I go back to the point, the reason people gather is their passion for this labeling that they get from their home team. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a lot of other ways to go through your life. And I think, Bob, you know, this actually is a precursor. Our changed patterns of living and restrictions is a precursor to what climate change is going to do to us down. This is a good practice run, but because I think, you know, down the road, you know, we're going to have more restrictions. But when it comes to sport, that gathering and support and passion and the ability to paint your face and scream your head off and to enjoy with someone that shares the same thing, whether you know them or not, I think sport does that. It's a unifier, and I think it will be the least affected.
So you talked about you think that we're going to have full buildings by midseason. I assume you're talking in Canada. The disparity between Canada and the United States, how much of a factor will that be for people? And it's almost, we always get accused of having an unfair disadvantage because of the border, but this seems to be another one.
Well, but you know what, the ability of visiting teams, and we saw it with the NHL, all of a sudden, you know, teams are allowed to come in and play for the playoffs. But I think when people in Canada they're watching their home team playing down in New York and it's a full house, they're going to say, you know, damn, I'm going out to the game. You know, next time I'm going out to the game. I think they're going to see them as a lead in to let's get back to normal. If they're doing it, we're going to do it. That's what I think.
I know you with Brian Cooper, you don't deal with your core business, the core business that you've had all your life on a daily basis anymore. But you're still attached to...
I'm chairman of the company, yes.
PG. So
you're chairman of everything.
So let me ask you. I'm not going to name any of your clients, although they would all be familiar. But these are major corporations who spend a lot of dollars in terms of marketing and promotion, especially in the sports arena. So part of the package for one of your clients would be in arena advertising, rink board advertising, you know, a whole variety of things that have not been impactful for the past 18 months. What happens to those dollars that were committed?
Well, it's a combination, Bob. There's contracts can, it depends which client. And we went through this with all of them. Contracts can be extended. Okay, we're going to roll over for another year. You don't have to pay for it, but we're rolling another year. There could be make goods. Here's more inventory, you know, digital inventory that we're going to give to you. And there could be a combination of here's more digital inventory, there's a rollover, and here is X million dollars back.
That didn't happen much, though.
It happened, John.
It did, huh?
It didn't happen much. It didn't happen much, but it happened.
Wow.
And it will continue to happen. When it depends on the size of the basket, right? And like how much are you paying for? How many teams are you being impacted by? How many broadcasts were not done?
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's a bunch of broadcasts that just didn't happen. So you had a truncated season. I'm not getting, you know, half of what I was going to get. And so I, you know, in terms of the broadcast coverage, to Bob's point of the signage and the audience. And so it had to be one of those three or a combination of any of them.
So, yeah. So signage, in arena signage, advertising on television, all those things, you know, are tangible assets that have value every time something happens. What about the naming rights? You executed.
You're exactly right.
The deal for Scotiabank.
Right.
What do you do with that? That's 40 million a year or something.
It was 40 million a year. There was a valuation made when we went into that negotiation to do the deal. So when you talk about a venue that averages 285 events a year, and in most cases, and I'm not just talking sport, Bob, I'm talking about concerts.
Sure. And everything that was canceled.
Well, and, you know, if you look at the opening shot of Hockey Night in Canada or any of those broadcasts live from Scotiabank Arena, and, you know, they had the outside venue and the branding, all those things had a value. And so what we did was we took those valuations and it was from when we negotiated. So it had already been all agreed upon. And then we sat down and negotiated again of how is this going to be made up? And in some cases, it couldn't be made up. So that could be the extension. In some cases, it could be here's more digital inventory. In some cases, here's the funds. And in most cases, it was here's not the, I'm going to write a check to you, but the next check, hold back because you don't know it's because
right.
It was one of those.
Let me interrupt you there because I want to clarify this point. So you're saying that when you negotiated the deal with MLSE on behalf of Scotiabank, each one of these criteria had a value mm-hmm. placed upon it?
Yeah. First of all, I'm not specifically talking about Scotiabank. I'm talking about a bunch of our clients, Scotiabank included in it. And yes, and I'll give you an example. Like if you're a beverage company and you had 285 events and you paid X number of dollars, knowing that you were going to make X number of dollars on your pop or alcoholic beverage being poured and sold in that venue, right. There's a dollar figure there. You know what you were getting back. So it's easy right. to ascertain of what you lost. And so, you know, look, it didn't happen like that, but it was pretty easy to do.
So a lot of the makeup, a few of the makeup, the make goods, as they're called in the business, were done in hockey, particularly with names on divisions in standings. There was a little one, but logos on helmets and logos on potentially logos on sweaters. So, we were always led to believe this was a one-off. We're going to get through this and then we're going to revisit it. But I think the cat's out of the bag. Don't you, Brian? I think it's never coming back.
100%. 100%. John, they used you're right. They created new inventory as a result of this pandemic.
Right.
And in order to make good for the value that was lost on some of these contracts. And in this case, you're talking league contracts and combination
and team
contracts.
Yeah.
But yeah. But now all of a sudden they're saying, well, wait a second, this has got real value. We weren't going to make that step until down the road. But now that it's out, let's do it. And you know, either keep it with that sponsor that we did the make good, or let's use that as a flagship inventory property to get a new sponsor from cryptocurrency, a new category from sports betting,
right.
A new category. That both of those are going to be very big players in future income for the teams and the leagues.
I wouldn't ask you to be specific because I know you wouldn't be. makes no sense. Do any of your clients engage in significant conflict in terms of restructuring their agreements with franchises?
I don't understand the question.
Well, okay, so if you represented a soda company, I'm trying to think of mm-hmm. some category that you don't actually do, and I don't know if you do mm-hmm. soda.
Mm-hmm.
If your soda company was spent $10 million a year in sponsorship of Team XYZ, and now the pandemic comes and now you're trying to, you know, restructure a deal. Were there deals that are still up in the air because the two sides couldn't agree? And what's the process of that agreement? Or was everything, you know, amicable?
It was, you know what, I think because of the pandemic was affecting everybody in different ways, businesses and, you know, look, MLS&E and, you know, Winnipeg, you know, they didn't have a penny of revenue. They didn't sell a t-shirt. They didn't sell a pop or whatever. So I think everyone came in with an open mind. Okay, let's get through this together because everyone's business has been impacted negatively. So I don't think it was one of those, you know, we're going to sit down and we're going to rip each other's throat out. It was, okay, let's find a way to do this reasonably. So that at the end, we both come out of this and hopefully get back to normal.
Do you know of any conflict that existed anywhere that resulted in or is still resulting in legal action?
No.
Not one, huh?
Not one.
Anywhere in North America that you've heard of?
Oh, I haven't heard of it. I mean, there may be one, Bobby, but I haven't heard of it. Again, I think the attitude was, you know, we're, you know, people are dying here.
And, oh, yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we'll keep our fingers crossed. The next few days will be critical for Team Canada in terms of basketball out in Victoria. Six teams. Canada has to finish first. Yep. Anything less than that, and it's back to the drawing board, essentially, or wait till next year, more accurately. But it certainly would be nice if the men's team were able to make it to the Olympic Games and join the ladies who have already so qualified. We'll keep our fingers crossed for you and for the team. All the best to them, and thanks a lot. Nice to see you too, Brian.
Great to see you guys. Thanks a lot.
Brian Cooper. We'll come back with more after these messages. So our thanks to Brian Cooper for joining us. It's McCowan, it's Shannon. I wonder what the reaction will be if Canada, we know what the reaction will be if Canada makes it to the Olympics. That'll be very positive. Do you think they'll be negative if they don't?
It's interesting. You wonder with the timing, how many people are aware of what's going on in Victoria with the qualifying tournament, although it seems to be growing, as Brian talked about. There is an acknowledgement that basketball is a growing sport in our country, and that the NBA players that are contributing to this have really helped. So I think that, you know, unfortunately, with the history of basketball, Canada and the Olympic team is, if they lose, well, it's the same old, same old. Say, you know, we can't beat Greece. We can't beat China. Why can't we be better? But you do get a sense, I think, that the foundation that is being created in our country over the last 4 or 5 years, since Steve Nash and Rowan Barrett took over, really, in many ways, has grown. And there are more players and more opportunities and more desire to play for Canada. So I guess in the short term, if they lose, I hope we don't roll our eyes and say it's the same old, but I think we have a lot to look forward to, not just in Beijing if they get there, but, you know, in the next Olympics in Paris or even beyond that.
Well, I have no desire to stick a pin in the balloon, but I'm going to take you back. In 2012, the conversations that we were having were, in 16 will be good, in 20 will be great.
Yeah.
And guess what? We weren't good in 16.
No.
Now, were we not good because we didn't have the talent? What happened was the talent wouldn't play.
Same issue we've had for 30 years, Bob.
That's it. But we were told, this is a new group. They're going to play. They're going to commit. You know, we had 15-year-olds playing in international competitions. Mm-hmm. You know, and they appeared ready to commit. But then when push came to shove, something always came up. Contract thing, this, that, injured. So now you've got more NBA players than you ever have playing for Canada. But it's literally a lose one game and you're done kind of scenario. I mean, it's not exactly that way, but...
By the weekend, it really might be. By the weekend, it might be.
One team out of six out of this tournament that's going to make it.
Yeah. It's not going to be easy, that's for sure.
Well, no. And yes, you have a bunch of more talented players, but they haven't played together. Mm-hmm. Or sparingly played together. It'll be very interesting to see what the response is either way. I know basketball fans in this country will be happy if they make it to Tokyo, but will they be, how big a disappointment will it be if again Canada fails?
Yeah, well, at least
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right answer. But let's at least enjoy the women in Tokyo, because the women are a really good team, and should be in place to be on the podium.
We hope so. We have our fingers crossed. That'll do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow if the creek don't rise. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan. Thanks, everybody.